Welcome, everybody, to your World War III alert. This is Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
Yeah, all of the pieces falling into a messy place right now as we watch what's about to happen with an Israeli retaliation for a retaliation against Iran. And we will be talking about all of those details on tonight's show. It's getting scary.
Raise your hand if you want that. Now, that comes on an inconvenient day for Americans because we had to file taxes. Today it's tax day in the U.S. And so it really, you know,
look at that.
It feels like a sledgehammer to your
balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you pay that, this is
when
your...
you look at how much we have to pay. You know, the average American works from January till May for the government. You don't get to keep anything until June if you consolidate it like that. So filing our taxes this tax season just felt awful because it's going to warmongers. So raise your hand if you're happy to pay your taxes into the war treasury.
Well, and also this week, the House of Representatives Speaker Johnson right now is like waffling, trying to decide what the hell he's going to do here. Is he going to try to separate out a Ukraine, get rid of the Ukraine money and just focus on an Israel-only money budget that they're going to send another $60 billion.
I mean, they're like skinny jeans, right? The war in Ukraine. Like, it's just out of fashion.
Yeah, that's just, that's last year's fashion. So, but this is where your tax dollars are going. So as many as you, how many of you filed taxes today or waited, you know, did you wait till the last minute? Did you do it earlier? Let us know in the comments below. Good to see all of you here on this Monday. We're also tonight going to talk about a huge update on the bridge collapse in Baltimore, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, major developments on that front. And it might not shock you at all. We'll talk about that.
Plus, we did spend, or at least someone here spent the weekend reading the CAS review, which is the updated gender guidelines for the United Kingdom. It should apply to the whole world. It's a fantastic report. We're going to talk about how the trans activists are freaking out over truth and research because they've worked so hard to hide it for years and years. And guess what that's earning them, especially in the United States? What do you get, Clayton, when you malpractice medicine? What do you get?
Promoted?
No.
I don't know.
Clayton, America. We're
government
talking about
funding?
America.
No.
In mal-
in,
you get
pre- in a functional?
Oh, society. Functional society. Yeah. I'm sorry.
What do you get?
I was thinking about America right now.
For medical malpractice, what do you get?
You get sued.
That's what's happening.
Wow. Hallelujah.
And these practitioners will continue to do that now that this research has seen the light of day, because if you are someone who had your nether regions cut off and then you realize that doctors never had research to say that that was a good thing to do for you, well then, litigation is the way we handle our values in the United States. So we're going to see more of that.
It's going to be a lot of people that cut off their penises calling up
and
lawyer.
Saying, wait.
Wait a minute. Can you imagine the billboards? You know how they say, like, call Johnson
like,
and Johnson. Were you in an accident? You know, call a lawyer. Did you have your penis cut off? Did you, you know, sign up for transgender surgery?
Right.
Well, you might want to call Johnson and Johnson.
I get it. Yeah.
Get it?
You're more impressed with that than
I am very
maybe
impressed
most,
with that.
But, okay.
I'm impressed with my Johnson joke. Hey, we've got a crazy Monday for you here and a lot to get to. And, you know, we're trying to have some levity in a moment when literally the world is facing war. We're seeing, of course, major companies right now in a bit of a free fall. And there's a lot of panic right now happening. You saw craziness, of course, going on Wall Street. And right now what's happening with gold. You see all these countries drawing battle lines right now, because I'm going to tell you what, if we see this war massively unfolding in the Red Sea and in the Persian Gulf, you're going to see the Straits of Hormuz closing, of course, you're going to see oil prices surging. That is the major concern right now. Oil hitting, you know, $130, $140 a barrel. President Biden, of course, raiding the strategic oil reserves, so we have nothing left at this moment. And so they're, and you're seeing bank runs. I don't know if you saw this afternoon up in Canada, people trying to go into RCB to get money out. The banks are saying you can't take your money out. Really? Now we've got bank runs on top of all of this. This is a major, major concern right now, which is why we're big proponents of having at least some of your savings right now in precious metals. And tonight's show is brought to you by our friends over at Lear Capital. They can help you buy gold. They can help you get silver. And I'm telling you right now, silver is super cheap compared to gold. Gold just hit an all-time high this week. So making sure that your family is protected, have a little bit on savings right now that is in precious metals, separate from this corrupt system on this tax day. So give them a call. They're American patriots. They love to talk to our viewers on the phone. They support what we do here, independent journalism. Please please call their 800 number right now, 1-800-613-3557 for your free guide, or go to LearRedacted.com. Again, 1-800-613-3557 for your free guide, or go to LearRedacted.com. Thank you for supporting Redacted on this Monday. LearRedacted.com. Well, the truth about Iran's attack on Israel is now coming out. If you read the mainstream media, though, Iran didn't even leave a scratch on Israel with the launch of hundreds of drones, dozens of cruise missiles. You might see headlines like this. Take a look. 99% of Iran's aerial threat were shot down. But the truth is starting to come out despite a media blackout. You're not even allowed to enter into those areas to get photos or videos to share on social media. And the New York Times is now reporting that Israel is about to respond and launch an attack of its own against Iran within 48 hours. So a retaliation for a retaliation, I guess. Again, this is according to the New York Times. We want to bring in former U.S. Marine, former U.N. Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter, who late last week said this attack was about to happen, and you were proven correct. It did happen. And do you think, Scott, that we're going to see, first of all, we'll get into the details about the attack in just a moment, but do you think we're going to see an Israeli response here with this war cabinet being convened? What do you think the next 48 hours is going to look like?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is domestic Israeli politics writ large. This has nothing to do with the security of Israel from a traditional standpoint. This has everything to do with the political survivability of Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister who oversaw, you know, the greatest security failure in Israeli history on October 7th when Hamas attacked Israel, and now has presided over, you know, what some people might even say is an even greater security failure, the inability of Israel to prevent Iran from reaching out and touching with ballistic missiles a strategic defense sites that were protected by the best ballistic missile defense that Israel and American money could buy. So there's some posturing taking place right now. I bring up as much as I can the following reality. No American president in modern era has won election by turning his back on Israel. And no Israeli prime minister has stayed in office by turning his back on the United States. And right now you have a situation where Joe Biden, because of the outlandish behavior of Israel, is starting to turn his back. He made it clear that America would not stand side by side with Israel if it attacked Iran. And we have a prime minister in Israel that's telling the president of the United States, I don't care what you say, I don't care what you do, we're going to behave this way anyways. The motivations of both men are inherently political. Joe Biden is running for re-election, and he can't have another war. He can't have a war with Iran that would create an energy security crisis. Again, I remind your audience that under Biden's leadership, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve of the United States is down to less than 17 days. That's a little over 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, of economic viability should Iran shut the Strait of Hormuz and start launching attacks against critical oil-producing infrastructure in the region, which would be a byproduct of any American participation in an Israeli strike. Israel can't launch and sustain a viable military action against Iran without American assistance. So what's happening right now is the Israelis are saying to America, we're going to start this war anyways, and we just assume that you're going to come alongside us because you'll have no choice. And that puts Biden in an even further, you know, political quandary. I would like to believe that a lot of this is debate for political consumption. The fact that, we're reading about this in the New York Times and the Israeli press means that there's people who want us to be reading about this. And I think that's important because it shows posturing. So Benjamin Netanyahu and the cabinet can say, we wanted to strike, but we were held back by the United States, and shift the political responsibility to the United States. I still don't believe that Israel would launch and can launch an attack against Iran because the consequences of such would be dire. Iran proved, and again, I know we'll talk about this later, that it can strike anywhere in Israel anytime it wants. And they've said that if Israel attacks, they'll respond 1,000-fold, and they have the capacity to do so. So We'll see. These are desperate times. And when you start throwing in, you know, narcissistic driven personal politics, which is what this is about, Benjamin Netanyahu holding on to power, even though his continuation as prime minister is bad for the Israeli state, he does it for his own personal preservation, given the fact that as soon as he resigns or leaves office, he'll be indicted on corruption charges and probably spend the rest of his life in jail. Joe Biden is recognizing that his sinking political prospects in November could go completely underwater if there's a larger war with Iran that destroys the American economy. So, you know, we have both men doing things that are driven not by the collective good of their respective populations, but by their own personal desire for political viability. And if you couch it in those terms, if their priority is, you know, sustained political viability, it's very difficult to predict the future.
One thing, though, is predictable, and it always seems to come to fruition, is what the United States Congress does, which is funnel tens of billions of additional revenue over to Israel. And an emergency meeting this weekend of Congress, you hear Republican leader Mike Johnson, of course, pushing for additional aid to Israel. They're trying to decouple it right now from Ukraine. He'll lose his speakership if he funnels any money, more money to Ukraine. So it seems like Congress has an appetite to send more money and weapons and support to Israel. It'll just see, I guess, what happens in the next 48 hours on Congress. We're kind of watching that closely. But you did bring up the, of course, the attack this weekend and what some of those missiles managed to hit major targets inside of Israel. And as I mentioned off the top here, the headlines, the mainstream media headlines are 99%, we got it, no worries at all. Didn't even leave a scratch. In fact, I even heard those same terms from Israelis saying not even a scratch, not even a scratch. But now we're learning that there was more than just a scratch. Can you walk us through, you've been tweeting about this and some of the specifics about how this was actually a devastating attack on certain targets in Israel?
Well, I want to put a modifier on the term devastating. To me, a devastating attack means that a facility has been completely wiped out, made non-operational, permanently so. We don't know. There's three primary strategic targets, and there were several secondary strategic targets, meaning targets related to Israeli ballistic missile defense that were struck by the Iranians. One target, which is an Israeli intelligence facility in the Golan Heights, nobody's talking about. And it appears that may have been where the Iranians may have made an exception to their "we just want to touch you" rule and actually have done serious damage to this site. This is an intelligence facility that Israel uses to reach out and collect information in Syria, taking advantage of the dominant heights, etc. And it was involved in the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate. So the Iranians said, you know, we're taking this out. And there's a blackout of information. Israeli media is not allowed to mention this, discuss this, et cetera. So the implication is something very bad happened there, but that's pure speculation. There were two air bases, and I'll just talk about the one air base. It's a base that the United States has deployed an X-band radar, the ANTPY-2 radar. This is the most powerful over-the-horizon radar in the world today. It gives the United States and indirectly Israel the ability to monitor over-the-horizon Iranian ballistic missile launches. The radar is specifically designed to collect Iranian ballistic missile launches. And it has been in place in Israel at the Nevatim Air Base for over a decade now. It is linked up with the American ballistic missile defense system, meaning that there's connectivity to Colorado, where the headquarters is, and connectivity to American satellites, surveillance satellites. The totality of the American anti-ballistic missile world is linked up to this, meaning that Israel has become an extension of America's ballistic missile defense. It's also linked to the joint U.S.-Israeli anti-missile systems that have been put in place, the Arrow 2, the Arrow 3, the David Sling capabilities, plus a THAAD missile battery, an American missile battery that has been deployed and integrated, and advanced Patriot systems. Novatim is the most heavily defended space on Earth, when it comes to anti-ballistic missile defense. And this is the place that cannot be touched. It is specifically designed to defeat Iranian medium-range ballistic missiles. The Iranians know this. They've seen this. And so over the years, they've developed certain capabilities. They've evaluated our ability to detect and our ability to respond. They recognize that the moment their missiles take off, that the United States and Israel will be made aware of that fact. They understand that if these missiles fly on a traditional ballistic trajectory, that they will be surveilled, targeted, and intercepted successfully so. And so Iran has developed certain capabilities, such as separating warheads, so that as the missile body comes up and it's detected initially, the warhead separates, and now the radar has to discriminate against the main body of the missile and a smaller warhead. And traditional algorithms, you know, that have been programmed in focus on the main body, so missiles will now be sent striking a derelict piece of space debris while the maneuvering warhead comes in. But now the maneuvering warhead can be detected. The X-band radar is very capable. So as the maneuvering warhead comes in, it does things such as change its trajectory so that you can't do a traditional algorithm driven. The object is flying at this speed on this predictable trajectory with ballistic factors. We can intercept it. Now it's maneuvering, it's changing, and the system has to catch up to that. And then what it can do is the Iranians on this warhead have a engine built in. So at the last second, the engine can fire, changing the trajectory of it, which throws everything off. They also build a warhead that comes in and then fires out a series of decoys that go around the warhead and create multiple targets that overwhelm the system while the warhead itself maneuvers in and strikes the target. So Iran was developing this. What we saw on the 14th was Iran fired missiles that broke through the most sophisticated air defense system in the world and touched Novatim, and touched it in a way that the people understood that they had been touched. They struck the runway in two spots, center mass, taking that runway out. Now, if they had come in and hit it with 20 missiles up and down the runway, they would have taken it out permanently. They didn't do that. They just said, we can hit this runway anytime we want to. They hit a warehouse. They hit three other facilities, center mass, meaning they didn't miss their target. They also struck air defense systems. For instance, at least two Iron Dome systems were taken out. Israel won't talk about this, but you see the evidence on the video. You see the Iron Dome missiles firing. These are the missiles that I talked about that shoot out the decoys. You see them coming in. They shoot the decoys. The Iron Dome gets saturated, saturates the decoys. Meanwhile, the maneuvering warhead comes in. And at the last second, you can see on the video where the warhead tips up, comes in for the final attack, hitting it direct. Iran has sent a signal to the United States and to Israel that your missile defenses don't work, that we can hit any place we want, any time we want, with as much firepower as we want. We opted not to do it this time because all we're doing is setting a deterrence posture. We're letting you know that if you ever attack us again, we will strike you and you can't stop us. That's the most important aspect about this. The most heavily defended space on the earth in terms of anti-ballistic missile capability was struck successfully by the Iranians using the very missiles that this system was designed to defeat.
And I guess when I say devastating, I mean metaphorically, because to me that is how devastating this is, right? You're sending this clear message. We're not going to wipe out the entire runway. And I know from Israeli sources that they've already got a truck over there. They already patched the runway. So yeah, it was to show you we can hit you and you can't stop us. And that is devastating when we hear about the Iron Dome and the great capabilities of all of this. So Scott, I'll get you out of here on this. We talk about this sort of political posturing, the narcissism of both of these leaders right now. What do you think is going to happen over the next 48 hours? Or if anything, do you think that there will be a massive Israeli response, and do you think the United States will involve itself in it?
Benjamin Netanyahu is a desperate man right now, so it's very difficult to do predictive analysis because desperation is irrational. Most predictive analysis is drawn from rational, logical, you know, analysis. Let me make it clear. Israel cannot successfully attack Iran by itself. Israel has a handful of Jericho missiles that it can fire and they can reach Iran. But, you know, the Iranian nuclear capability, because that seems to be the principal target, is very well dug in and has been dispersed in a way that it can't be taken out in a single strike. Israel could launch a few of these Jerichos. Israel could try and get some of its F-35Is over Iranian airspace. But the danger here is the F-35 in and itself is a deterrent. The mere fact that Israel has F-35Is is meant to deter people from doing things. If Israel projects F-35Is into Iranian airspace, there's a very good chance that a significant number of these fighters will be lost. They'll be shot down, the pilots captured or killed. And the myth of the invulnerability of the F-35 will have been broken. And that's not good for Israel, and that's not good for the United States. And so I believe the United States is telling Israel that we aren't going to be there for you. You're not going to get the refueling aircraft that you think you're going to get. You're not going to get clearance over Saudi Arabia or Turkey. You're going to be going it alone, overflying Jordan, overflying Iraq in a very predictable route. The Iranians are going to be there waiting for you, and then they're going to come in, and it's going to be hammer time in Israel. And there's nothing we can do to help you. We can't stop the Iranians from attacking you. And the next time they attack, they're going to kill you, all of you. It will be very bad for Israel. We don't want that. Unfortunately, desperate politicians often like to say, well, you're bluffing. They're bluffing. They'll never do that. You'll never abandon us. You'll be compelled to come in. I don't know what's driving these Israeli politicians. If it was genuinely the national security of Israel, then they'd call it a day and just, you know, set back and maybe start carrying out more aggressive proxy, hybrid warfare against Iran. That's what I would do if I were the Israelis. But these are desperate people who understand that if Netanyahu goes down, they lose their governing coalition, this far right wing part of Israeli political spectrum. They'll never govern again. It'll be over for them. And so they're desperate to hold on to power. And right now, the posture of being prepared to strike Iran, they deem to be the most domestically political viable posture for them. So this is very dangerous. I have to tell you that I don't know what the future is. Normally, I like to give you a bold prediction.
Right.
But right now, I can't. And I'm actually scared because the consequences as an American. I believe in humanity. I don't want harm to anybody. But if Israel and Iran want to slit their respective throats, that's their business. We can, as Americans, step in and say, we don't think this is a good idea. We think this is bad policy, et cetera. But if at the end of the day, you want to do that, that's your business. But as an American, the consequences that will accrue, the detrimental consequences that will accrue to my country, my people, my nation, will be horrific. And it won't be a nuclear war for us, but it might as well be because the economic collapse that will happen when we don't have the fuel, when we have... Do you remember that strike in Long Beach, California, when the trucks weren't getting out and what was happening to the American economy, the price of diesel, the availability of diesel, the lack of food and products in the market? That's just a whiff. That's a hint of what will happen if Israel attacks Iran, and this becomes a regional conflict where the energy security of the world is not just put at risk, but collapses. This will be devastating. The American people don't understand. For all those people out there shouting, we need to stand with Israel, I mean, that's like saying, I want to buy a ticket on the Titanic after it struck the iceberg. The ship's going down. You don't want to be on that ship. But our blind love for Israel, and it is blind, has us doing things that empower Israel to carry out actions that will be extraordinarily detrimental for the American people.
Yeah, we'll see how they feel about it once oil hits $138 a barrel. And it directly impacts the Americans' wallets and being able to provide food, put food on the table. Even when we had the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack, what that was threatening on the East Coast of the United States. So, yeah, I think you're right about this. And I have that same scared feeling about it. Scott, thank you so much for your analysis and keeping us abreast of what's going on here. And we'll check back with you real soon. We appreciate it as always.
Okay, thanks, Clayton.
Thanks, Scott. You know, a lot of you probably, you know, may or may not agree with him. I see a lot of people saying thanks for his analysis. Others saying, you know, no, I mean, Scott's a damn fool. Remember, Scott was a former UN weapons inspector and who would walk through these facilities and these sites.
In the Middle East, like he was
in the Middle East. Yeah, unless, if that's you, if you've done that in your career and you're sitting there as a keyboard cowboy saying he doesn't know what he's talking about, then you don't know, you don't know. You don't know how he was set up and framed and all of that. I mean, there's a whole, you know, anyway, but he's walked the walk through these sites. He's looked at the, you know, he knows these areas intimately and his sources are fairly impeccable.
And if you're listening, instead of listening through your tribal sensibilities, but if you're actually listening, what he's saying here is that these moves, even if you love Netanyahu and you love Israel, you should absolutely be looking out for the Israeli people. And these political moves will reverberate. They will boomerang back on the Israeli people.
Yeah,
it will cause death.
I mean, I was having trouble sleeping. I have friends in Tel Aviv and, you know, and I was like, I'm praying for you. I hope in the morning, like, you know, God forbid. And thankfully there was no civilian targeted sites. It was focused specifically on military targets where this attack happened. But, there's human beings involved in all of this. So the, whatever tribalism you have right now, we don't want this. We don't want any of this. And I think at the heart of this, right, what he said there about he's scared. And I feel that for him to say that, a U.S. Marine, former weapons inspector who's been raked over the coals through hell and back when he said that he was going to stand up and admit that there was no weapons of mass destruction, he was told point blank that the CIA was going to ruin his life. Then he's on record about that. And they did. And that's what they do to people that they don't like. And when they tell the truth. But when he said, I'm scared, I mean, it really is a terrifying thought. But furthermore, when he said, you know, if Iran and Israel want to slit their own throats right now, what should the United States response be? The United States response, in my opinion, should be get the hell out of there. And Americans are going to be killed. Americans in these bases are going to be killed. They're sitting there as guinea pigs and as, sitting ducks right now. And it's terrifying. So stop it. Try, you know, hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we can get the hell out of there and no Americans will be killed as well in this this warfare that's about to unfold. So anyway, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday. Good to see all of you guys. Yes, we are live. Someone said, are you guys live? Yes, we are live. I'll prove it to you. And Anna in the chat says exactly 100%. Kay Nagel. Yes, Jen. What's that?
I was going to say, I'm not live. I'm a recording, but
oh, you're
everyone
recording.
Else is.
Philip's a recording.
Philip is AI. He doesn't actually exist.
Yeah. Let's see. Cypher. Yeah. Mary Folks says, I agree, you guys. We don't want this, but I stand with Israel. Okay, Mary. That's good for you. We stand for humans right now. I mean, that's where we are on this show. Like, please, no more killing. End these wars. There's no reason for any of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got more news to get to on this Monday.
We do. We're going to talk about January 6th because that narrative is crumbling with a new investigation in Congress. Does it matter? Kind of. I mean, Congress has no power.
I think it matters.
It matters. You know why it matters is because you get a vote coming up here in November. That's why it matters. It should factor into the way that you're calculating who's lying to you and who's exploiting stories and truth. So we're going to talk about that because it's important. We're also going to talk about the bridge collapse in Baltimore, Maryland, because we have more news to bring you about that. And we're going to talk to you about the Cass Review, the major bombshell gender ideology report that shows it's not based on science. They've got nothing. They hurt kids with no reason. You know who's pissed about it? Gay people. Gay people on Twitter are furious because they realize how much gay kids have been hurt. This is the new homophobia. I don't want to say I told you so because I've been saying this for a long time. But I freaking told you so, you guys, and it's time. So it's go time. This information is out. It's not just something that Natalie's reading in her books, right? Mm-hmm. We can all agree that this was crap, so we're going to get there. But first, we want to tell you about Policy Genius, because if you are in the market for insurance, I mean, hey, it's April 15th, you guys. This is a day for adulting. Your taxes were due. We should talk about sexy things like insurance policies, right? So where do you even go when you need to look for insurance? Well, Policy Genius is a great place, not just to bundle your home and auto. Also, you can look for life insurance because it's always prudent to make sure that your family is taken care of. You can compare life insurance quotes. You can decide whether or not you want to take a blood test or a health test for that life insurance policy. You decide. You get to see all of the options, all in one place. So, you know, you don't have to bundle this to your job. You can think about whether or not you want something better. Policy Genius gives you unbiased advice from a licensed expert support team. They have no incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you just shop it. It's just a great way to shop all of your policies so you know you're getting the right thing. So check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head on over to Policy Genius or click the link in the description below to get your free life insurance quote and see how much you can save. That's right, taxes, life insurance. I mean, you know, it's cool to be responsible, you guys. You got to think this stuff through. So head on over to policygenius.com.
Let us know where you're joining us from around the world in the chat room tonight. And if you're, by the way, I should mention this, I don't mention this enough, and I know that this matters, actually, it really does. If you would please be so kind, if you're watching us on YouTube right now, this really helps with the algorithm. I know it's crazy, but if you actually hit the like button, I know it sounds crazy. If you're watching us on a television or you're watching us on a smartphone or whatever, you can actually just hit the little like button and it actually pushes us further out into the algorithm. For some reason, YouTube loves to kind of suppress the things that we do here on a regular basis. So when we're live, if you actually do that, more people can come in and watch the show. And we've got a lot of really good stories coming up for you that we've worked hard on today. So we hopefully we'll get more people to watch. That's the goal.
All right. Well, did Donald Trump try to deploy the National Guard on January 6th? And if that is the case, does that blow up the whole Democratic narrative that Donald Trump wanted a violent insurrection on January 6th in order to stay in power? Now, the Daily Mail is reporting that at least three whistleblowers will testify to Congress. Actually, Congress reports this too. But the Daily Mail says that they spoke to people who know what they're going to say, and it will, in fact, be damning because that testimony is coming up on Wednesday, the 17th of April. What they're supposedly about to tell us is that President Trump not only did tell the National Guard to be on call for January 6th, but they testified this to the January 6th committee. Recall that whole dog and pony show that we saw that was led by Liz Cheney, who told us that, you know, Donald Trump was personally threatening all of these members of Congress. He was trying to incite violence and an insurrection to stay in power. Well, these people said, hey, we were at the ready. The president told us to go in. And for whatever reason, our leaders didn't let us go. And also, we told this to the January 6th committee and they omitted our testimony. Why would they do that, do you think? Any guesses? Why?
Didn't fit the narrative?
That seems like the easiest,
Maybe it's
Occam's razor.
Yeah, you could lump it into the same way that when Trump told people to stand down, no violence, go home.
Yeah.
They deleted that tweet and hid that, and probably part of the same narrative, I would think.
You would think. Now, here's what the Daily Mail heard from a source saying the person familiar with this upcoming testimony said the whistleblowers will provide testimony that the then Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy delayed by at least 2 hours providing official notice to the D.C. National Guard Commander William Walker to deploy troops to the Capitol. So that's interesting. What we're getting here, of course, is a committee that's investigating a committee. This is run by Chairman Barry Loudermilk. He's leading the House Administration Committee's Oversight Subcommittee. It's a committee with it. It's like blowing a bubble within a bubble. Have you ever done that when you're chewing gum?
Yeah.
That's what this is. It's a committee in a committee. They're tasked with reviewing the investigation done by the Select Committee on the January 6th attack. The testimony revolves around the under oath testimony of Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy. That's this dude. He has already testified that he did deploy the National Guard. He says in a timely manner. But the D.C. National Guard Commander William Walker said he had troops at the ready and they were never given the green light. They were never given the go. And he didn't hear about it until much later in a press conference. The troops said that they found out about this mobilization during, like, they're standing there. And then they see on a press conference the National Guard's deployed. And they're like, wait, I'm the National Guard. No one told me. What were we supposed to go? What happened? Wow. That's literally what they're saying. Yeah. That's not how it's supposed to work.
No, it's not. Go ahead, Philip.
What I don't understand, like, so maybe I just, because I was never in the military, but how can if a president gives an order to any military body, surely there's a record of it somewhere, right? That they would know when this happened? Does the president just, like, can they just order troops and that's that and nobody knows about it?
That's a good question. I mean, it's like Commander-in-Chief.
That's an existential question. Tells, like if a tree falls in a forest.
Yeah. If the president of the United States tells Mark Milley, does Mark Milley even hear it and turn around and then hide it and then make his own decisions? We know that that's how Mark Milley operated. So where does that, yes, Mr. President, I will write this down. I will write down your order right here so I don't mess it up. It reminds me of going to a restaurant when the waiter has a table of like 10 people. And they start taking your order, but they don't actually have a piece of paper and a pen. And they're like, okay, go ahead. You're next. And I'm like, no. You're not going to write this down?
And you're like, please write it down.
Please write
it
down.
I got it.
And then they always come back like 5 minutes later, like, and to correct the order.
Yeah.
So you got to write it down. I don't think they write it down, though. I don't know that they write it down.
Right. Well, let's look at what they said further. McCarthy has stated under oath again that he did give this timely deployment order, but they didn't find out about it until a press conference, which led to a 3-hour and 19-minute delay of forces arriving at the Capitol, which gave, you know, AOC lots of time to cry on camera. That's what she needed maybe the most. Some suggest that McCarthy was vying for a spot in incoming President Joe Biden's administration, and he didn't like the optics of it looking like the Army under his command was trying to interfere or inhibit certification of the 2020 presidential election results, which means if that's true, and we don't know if it is or not, that he ignored his current boss, President Trump at the time, and said, I don't think I'll do that. Now, last month, the same committee released a transcript of never-before-seen interview with Tony Ornato. It's that scary-looking dude in the corner.
By the tree.
He's not doing the one
an
in the
Easter
back.
Egg. He's doing an Easter egg hunt.
Yeah.
The guy in the back cracks me up. I was hoping that was who this was, like, the only existing photo of who you were talking about. But
no, it's not. I just loved it. I'm like, that's kind of, you know.
Where's Tony? Where's Waldo?
It looks a little Men in Black, and I thought it was funner than
Wait, to the guy to the right or the guy back in the corner?
It's the guy on the right we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
No. If you Google his name, you can find better images of that, but you're not going to find a funner one, and I'm here for fun. Now, the man in charge, the man we're talking about, he's in charge of Trump's security detail on January 6th, and in the interview, he confirmed that Trump did authorize the National Guard for mobilization and deployment to D.C. that day.
Wow.
Okay, that's what he said.
Under oath.
Yes. So,
President, wait, say that again, just so anybody who's going to have a
conniption.
The
head of Trump's security said he heard the president, in fact, deploy the National Guard for mobilization to D.C. that day for January 6th, knowing that there would be a rigmarole, that there'd be some stuff to maybe put down.
Well, and of course, this comes down to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, right? Of course. So ultimate authority in Washington, D.C., and even as Robert Knight points out here, the National Guard cannot be deployed into D.C. without the approval of the Speaker of the House and the Mayor of Washington, D.C. So the President authorizes it, then the Speaker of the House and the Mayor of Washington, D.C. have to then sign off and approve it.
Okay. So they ignored the President's requests. Why? And furthermore, why have we not heard these testimonies already? Now, if indeed He gave those orders. Why weren't they followed? Well, here's what Army Lieutenant General reportedly said. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund and D.C. National Leader Major General Walker said that the Army Lieutenant Piot, who was the Army Staff Director at the time, I'm sorry, that's hard to follow. What they're saying is that guy Piot said, "I don't like the visuals of the National Guard standing a police line with the Capitol in the background." Does it matter what he likes or doesn't like if there are orders there that he didn't run it up the proper chain of command? And then... apparently, these whistleblowers will be able during Wednesday's hearing to corroborate that he actually said this, that like, the president wants this. I don't like it. I don't feel like doing it, and I'm not going to do it.
It's like the optics of a situation. Is that like a legitimate way of disobeying orders in the military? If they're like, we need you to take out this target and be like, no, I don't think that'll look very good on my resume.
I don't think it'll look very good. The optics should change a lot,
for military protocol.
Right now, anyway, for
killing
crying out
civilians
loud.
Civilians doesn't look so good. I'll stop it.
Maybe I don't like the optics of all of our soldiers getting trans surgery right now. I don't like those optics. Maybe they can change that.
Right. And so, again, if President Trump did try to contain the January 6th events rather than provoke it, and his orders were not followed, does this further implode the entire reason that states are trying to kick him off the ballot? Does it further prove that Democrats, alongside Dementor Liz Cheney, were lying to us during the January 6th TV show? Shouldn't the Democrats who left these testimonies out of that be censured at the very least for just making up stories and using Congress as a movie theater like that to suit their narrative? To be clear, the January 6th committee, they had no power. It was feckless. This committee will not have very much power either. Maybe they will suggest censure for the other people who put on a charade, a circus. Where it matters the most is in your vote. You get to decide which group is lying to you, which group is at least trying to get you the truth. Why did they exploit this story in order to get you to do what? That's where our power comes in. And so here's the information about the upcoming hearing. We can all decide to tune in or not. We should listen. I think we should know when people are spinning a yarn for us. And it feels very much like that has been happening around January 6th. But let me know if you read it any other way in the comments below. We have more news to get to. Yes, indeed, we do. We're going to talk about the bridge collapse and whether or not that may have been terrorism. We have an update on that horrific story. We also are going to tell you about the update about trans rights and how science seems to be back in vogue when it comes to treating children and maybe not giving young kids sex changes. That's happening. And this is the turning of the tide that we've been waiting for a long time, all the while young people being manipulated and experimented on.
I think this is one of the biggest stories of our time right now, and you guys should all stick around for it. It's a big, big story. And the next story, too, when we're going to talk about the Baltimore Bridge collapse, so stick around for both of those. But first, right now is the best time. I used to do gardening and landscaping. That was my job in between college. I'd come back and start with the mulching and all of that for the yard crew that I worked for. Starting at 7 in the morning to plant the trees, because right now in April is one of the best times to plant trees. Of course, I'm an East Coaster. That was my experience, so I know that it's one of the best times to start planting trees. And our friends over at Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States, with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants, over 2 million happy customers in the United States, and they will make it easy to order online. And your plants are shipped directly to your front door in 1 to 2 days. Now, guess what? You'll get 15% off. If you were thinking about planting a new box hedge or something else in your yard or a new fruit tree, whatever it is, based on your zip code and your location, you can get 15% off just by using our link. So go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted and then just give it a try. When you put in your address, it'll give you the types of plants that are best based on your location. And then, of course, you can order them shipped right to your door. If you're looking to add some privacy, some shade, natural beauty to your yard, Fast Growing Trees has in-house experts ready to help you make the right selection. We planted a beautiful Japanese maple that they shipped right to our front door, and it grew tremendously. It was gorgeous, packaged nicely, so you don't have to run over to one of those big box stores and get all the soil all over your trunk of your car and all of that. No, perfectly packaged, and it'll, you know, it's fantastic. Really, really great. We've been very, very happy with them. And my mother-in-law planted a beautiful one up in Boise, Idaho as well. It looks gorgeous as well. So check them out. Get 15% off when you use the code REDACTED. Go to fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. fastgrowingtrees.com/redacted. 15% off. Hey, Brett, thank you for your $5 super chat. It says, kudos to Philip. Philip, of course, is our technical director. Says, very talented. I used to be a technical director at CBS and PBS, so he recognizes talent.
That's right.
So there you go, Philip. Well,
thank you.
Philip is the one who switches all the cameras. Yes, he does all of the camera switching and all of the loading of graphics and all of the sound bites that we play here on the show, and he edits everything. So he's a...
So he has to follow along when we're talking about something and, you know, we try and order it.
Yeah, like you want to go like...
He knows... go ahead.
I was going to say, you want to go camera one or take my camera? Ready, go. That's Philip, you say?
Camera two?
Yeah.
Camera one.
Two shot. Yeah, there we go. Slider camera.
We
slider.
Keep that guy slider, on his toes. Slider.
My shot. My camera. There you go. David's camera. There's David. There's David. Beard. Beard camera.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. We've got a great crew here. We've got a small crew. We don't have millions of dollars and, you know, billions of dollars like the News Corps and all of those big organizations. So we're supported by you guys. So thank you guys so much for subscribing. We're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thank you guys for welcoming us into your living rooms or bathroom if you watch us, you know, on the toilet while you're on your cell phone. That seems appropriate as well.
That's when I read the newsletter.
Yeah, I mean, that's sometimes our show.
Perfect. You
know? We're not perfect. Yeah. We work really hard, but sometimes maybe it's a show worth flushing. I don't know. I'm just going to say that sometimes, you know? I'm a perfectionist.
Can't win them all.
Yeah, you can't win them all. We try our damnedest, like we're going to try right now. Well, do you remember when Joe Biden told us the morning after the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse that their investigation turned up no foul play, nothing to see here? Nothing to see. In fact, we're going to rebuild the entire bridge. We're going to do it. We're going to take care of it. Nothing to worry about. We're going to foot the bill for it. Taxpayers, we got it. Don't worry about it. Go home. Go enjoy your weekend vacation or whatever it is. Well, that just all changed this morning.
Let's just bring you a little bit of breaking news. Police in America, the FBI, have opened a criminal investigation into the Baltimore Bridge collapse. This happened, of course, back in March the 26th. The Washington Post is reporting that the FBI are going to now open a criminal probe into what happened there when that tanker crashed into that bridge.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So now we know Biden was lying straight out of his mouth. Well, we have the confirmation of how big a lie that was, that the FBI announcing, in fact, that they are now going to be looking into this terrorist attack, this cyber attack on the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And we have new reports that a highly sophisticated terrorist attack brought down the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. So the FBI opening this criminal probe into the bridge collapse. And according to the FBI, agents raided the container ship Dali early this morning, just before sunrise. And here's, I'm quoting now the FBI. They don't usually ever release any kind of a statement, but I know that, you know, this ship is being watched very, very closely. So people are like, why are there FBI now on board the ship? Like, what's going on here? So
you
here's,
can't hide it.
Yeah, they were there.
You could say that ship has sailed.
That's right. That's very good. Yeah, I like that. It's a night of puns. So here's what the FBI had to say. The FBI is present aboard the cargo ship Dali, conducting court-authorized law enforcement activity. Okay, court-authorized. So a warrant, presumably, unless they're operating under some sort of FISA warrant, right? Who knows exactly?
Well, court-authorized could mean they subpoenaed a grand jury, that they got a grand jury to give them permission to do something like this.
Perhaps.
Right.
They say there is no other public information available, and we will have no further comment on this. Okay, so I'm glad that it took just 20 days to open an investigation to what everyone with a brain knew was a cyber attack. I guess the FBI is taking a break from going door to door to people's homes, asking them about their Facebook posts, which is what they've been doing all over the country right now.
Does it really matter, though, that they are? Because can we trust them enough to know that they're actually doing an investigation and, you know, not another cover-up of some kind? Like, it just seems like they do more cover-ups these days than actual investigations.
Well, that's the right question. But I think you forget that a lot of well-intentioned people work for the FBI. So even if they do something, you know, that makes it to the top and then doesn't legitimately make its way to us, most FBI agents we've had on this show are good people. They try really hard to do the right thing and go by the rules. So,
and they're frustrated by their leaders.
Yeah, so there probably will be something, whether or not we get to see it or it is not politicized, that we don't know. But those are the right questions.
Yeah, yeah, speaking of the leaders, so you have like well-intentioned agents who are working their asses off, making no money. And then they have...
And there are a lot of well-intentioned investigators and lawyers as well that are trying to do the right thing. I think that we should not malign every government employee, right? We just,
no, of course not.
What's given to us, we don't know.
Right. But anyway, the point is that the leaders in a lot of these positions are the ones to blame. And I seem to remember the head of the FBI, Chris Wray, telling us back in January that China is targeting our major infrastructure, waterways, our bridges, our electrical grid. And he's shocked that we're not doing more about it. He was telling Congress, we need to be doing more about it. He told us this.
Well, my starting point would be that, as with most questions about the Chinese government's tactics and strategy, when one asks, is it A, B, or C, the answer is usually D, all the above. There has been far too little public focus on the fact that PRC hackers are targeting our critical infrastructure, our water treatment plants, our electrical grid, our oil and natural gas pipelines, our transportation systems, and the risk that poses to every American requires our attention now. China's hackers are positioning on American infrastructure in preparation to wreak havoc and cause real-world harm to American citizens and communities if and when China decides the time has come to strike.
So then a few weeks later, on February 21st, the Biden administration suddenly ordered this executive order. Executive order on amending regulations relating to the safeguarding of vessels, harbors, ports, waterfront facilities of the United States. So wait a second. So about a few weeks later, after Chris Wray warns about attacks on infrastructure, waterways, ports, etc., the Biden administration sends out an executive order amending regulations like that quickly? Really? Okay. That was pretty fast. John Herald tweeted this and points out some connecting dots here. John Herald says, last month, Biden issued an executive order embedding CISA into the cybersecurity of our vessels, harbors, ports, and waterfront facilities. I'm sure it's just a coincidence that 1 month later, a ship appears to spaz out before crashing into a bridge, John writes.
Yeah.
So what changed then? Why CISA? What is CISA? Well, of course, CISA is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, America's cyber defense agency. And it used to be that if something was going on with a ship or a port, well, you'd call the FBI to investigate under other port officials, right? You'd call the harbor master, you call the other port officials, you call the police, and you call the FBI to investigate this. Not anymore. Now the cybersecurity division will be embedded here as well. So CISA is now being shoved basically into everything in the United States. You are watching an agency growing like a cancer right before your eyes. We don't talk about CISA very much. Most people do talk to the FBI, the CIA. Mark my words, in the next few years, CISA will become one of the agencies where we're going to hear about all sorts of issues. We're going to hear it like stink on a monkey. We're going to be hearing it a lot in the coming years.
Okay. We covered it during the Twitter files, the Facebook files. We've been talking about how it's State Department run misinformation. So yes, I just want to say,
We're on that one.
And they're also, they're big on the misinformation stuff.
Yeah.
The misinformation stuff. Just want to remind you about that and refer you to segments we did. Oh, let's see. Last November, we talked about the House Judiciary Commission and how CISA was created with the sole purpose of controlling information online during the summer of 2020. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember?
I do remember. Okay.
So there'll be a quiz later, you guys.
So
freaking out.
So investigative journalist Laura Logan said that within hours of this, her sources had confirmed that it was a terror cyber attack on the United States. So why did it take the FBI 20 days to show up? So I started really thinking about this, thinking, well, could it be that CISA already knew it was a cyber attack? And those that are working in this expanding cyber agency inside the government already knew about it? And their bumbling friends over at the FBI are a little late to the party?
Welcome to the party, pal!
That's what immediately stood out to me. Again, here's Laura Logan explaining how her cyber sources in the Biden administration immediately were able to pin this as a cyber terror attack.
And here's the other thing that's concerned me. Why they run to the mic head? McCabe on this morning at sunrise on CNN saying it's not terrorism, it's not terrorism, it's not terrorism. It might not be terrorism, but why do you come to the mic right away? These are the type, we need facts, we need empirical evidence, we need an investigation. What is your investigation telling you?
Well, I have a better question for you, Steve. Why are you coming to the mic telling the country that it's not terrorism when your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And I know they are, because I didn't make this up. These are not my words, right? I'm talking to people who are on the inside, some who are on active duty, some who are retired, and everyone, literally, from critical infrastructure in Department of Homeland Security to the intelligence agencies, they know there's no other, it's there. This is a cyber attack on a critical infrastructure corridor for the United States. This is, you know, for those people who think this is just a river, this is in Baltimore, what does this matter? You don't know anything about what you're talking about. This, the I-94 corridor on the eastern seaboard, is literally what connects the north and south. And when I talk about hazardous materials, right, this is a brilliant, well-planned strategic attack on one of the most important supply chains in the United States of America.
So that's interesting. On the very morning, she's able to speak to her cybersecurity experts in the Biden administration who work in cybersecurity in the Biden administration who already knew that it was a cyber attack. So what's really going on here? Well, there are a few charges, of course, prosecutors could pursue if their investigation uncovers like criminal wrongdoing or neglect. Of course, most common charge, according to reports on this, maritime experts, is misconduct or neglect of ship officers, commonly referred to as seaman's manslaughter. The federal statute states that a ship's officer's inattention or negligence in their duty that results in the death of another is punishable by a fine and up to 10 years in prison. Remember, six people died as a result of this. Two were cast into the water. One was then rescued. Another was also not hurt as a result of it. But six people died as a result of this. So this was a cyber attack. This was a terrorist attack.
Right.
And we shouldn't forget
that. And an economy was crippled because of it, which will have continued rippling effects.
Yeah, and major amounts of military equipment flow through that harbor on its way to Ukraine also. So this is not a small matter. And now we're hearing this FBI investigation. I just think it's interesting 20 days later. Unbelievable. Let us know your thoughts on this.
That's the thing. Like the timeline, it just really messes with me, is 2 hours after the event happened, Biden comes out and says this was just an accident, it's not an attack.
Right.
And then 20 days later, they investigate. Like that's not how it works. That's backwards. You investigate, then you come out with the conclusion.
Right. And to Laura's point, their own cyber division is saying this was a cyber attack. And we know that this is a cyber attack. Why are they coming out to the microphone lying to the American people about it? Like, what are they hiding here?
Yeah.
There are other reports and there's speculation pointing to the Chinese Communist Party. We don't have confirmation of that, but there's certainly people who is sophisticated enough to pull off a major infrastructure attack on the United States like this. Let us know your thoughts on this. The U.S., right? Well,
Who is the only country that has launched a cyber weapon on a foreign adversary?
Well, the United States.
That's us. That's Stuxnet.
Stuxnet
is the answer. What? Yeah, Alex, I'll take Stuxnet.
Well, we should say that we know of. Right.
That we know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. For bonus points, who helped the U.S. do that? Launch Stuxnet on Iran?
Israel.
Israel.
Yeah.
Did that. Yeah. So we do that. We don't want other people to do it, though.
No, I'm reading a book right now called Blood in the Water by Joan Mellon about the USS Liberty and the ambush on the USS Liberty and the coordination between the CIA and the Israeli government to bomb you know, an American ship in order to get us involved in war. So we have a long history of false flags. America loves false flags.
Gulf of Tonkin.
Gulf of Tonkin.
We attacked our own ship.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The Maddox, and we destroyed our own ship to get us Bay of Pigs. To go through this book, you see the laundry list of false flags that we did not use that were then later used. Like, we're like, no, we're not going to use them now. No, we're not going to do that. But then it was later used. Like, they had already laid they had the template. They're like, went to a bookshelf and they like pulled it out. They're like, okay, we need a boat. No, we need an airplane.
Right. There's literally a book. Like, the we talked about the head of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And how Kennedy had considered like putting snake venom in his toothpaste in order to kill him, the guy who actually stood up to Belgium. We allowed him to be killed in a different way. He was just, I think, shot.
Yeah.
So the snake venom in the toothpaste bit, we didn't use that one. We're like, let's save it. That one's kind of creative.
Yeah, there was another one, of course, we were going to use in Cuba, but we didn't use it. But we then later, Kennedy decided not to use it. But then Johnson used it in Gulf of Tonkin. So we ended up still using it. It's like we still got a lot of use out of these, like, you know, come up with this report and let's hand
Patrice
this out.
Patrice Lumumba, I believe, is who I'm talking about.
What the name of it.
Right, in case the chat calls me out on it. Patrice Lumumba.
And okay. If anyone's interested in the book I'm reading, it's very good. It's called Blood in the Water, How the U.S. and Israel Conspired to Ambush the USS Liberty. It's eye-opening and troubling and very deeply troubling about the CIA as well. So you should read it if you're interested in that book. Anyway, let us know your thoughts on this.
Test your toothpaste. All right. Well, gay people are furious at the research that's coming out this weekend showing that it has been gay kids that they're mutilating by telling them they're trans and advocating sex changes for young kids. They're realizing now what we've been saying all along is that people with gender dysphoria grow out of it in their childhood and end up to be healthy functioning gay people, and it's trans rights business is just sterilizing and hurting gay kids. It's homophobia. That's what it is. It has been all along if you bothered to dissect what they were saying. And now, you guys, here come the lawsuits that you knew were coming, right? Because how can you take a whole population, do this to them based on no medical research, and not expect them to come around and sue you? That is what's happening. Here is a list from Transition Justice. But just one second, let me show you this list and then ask your question, David. They're a legal advocacy group that matches harmed patients with legal counsel so that they can sue. Now, I was not able to, if we could just leave this list up for a second and you can screenshot it later and help me look, I was not able to find very much about these two wrongful death cases at the bottom. Those cases don't seem to be public, even though they seem to be ongoing. So a lot of them we know, right? We know who Chloe Cole is. She's one of the most outspoken detransitioners. But this group says that lawsuits over what's called gender-affirming care, which is just sex changes for kids, they have increased eightfold since the first case in May of 2022. Now, what we're talking about is this. A child says they're transgender. They're given puberty blockers to block their puberty. The CAS report, by the way, lays out very clearly that children were never, they never said, I want puberty blockers because my puberty is scaring me and I think I might want to change genders. The reason we did this was because of a Dutch study where transgender adults said, might have been nice if I hadn't gone through puberty because then I could pass. So it was adults who gave children this idea. Children never said, oh, I want to stop puberty. We planted this idea in our heads, collective consciousness. Right. No, we puberty blockers?
No, the kids don't even know.
I mean, kids have no idea what puberty, like what do they didn't know they're even going to block?
Right. Now, even kids who study their own puberty are surprised by it. Puberty is a live monster that you cannot be prepared for. And of course, no one wants to do it, right? But it's a beautiful process. So then cross-sex hormones, all of this that we're talking about, allowing children to change their name and their gender on forms, and then offered cosmetic surgery, like shave your nose, shave your shoulders to pass, breast removal, penis construction, the like. We're talking about all of that and how we never studied any of it. And the research that we have now shows it does not help. It doesn't help. And also they have pre-existing medical conditions and we don't help them with that at all. So let's take a look because now Trans activists are mad as snakes that there is one place that lays this all out in a really well done report called the CAS Review. The trans activists, they want all this research to go away. They say it's transphobic and it will hurt children by delaying what they need, which they call gender affirming care. That's a trick of a word because it's when a boy says that they're a girl, you need to give them medicine to affirm them or surgery to affirm what they think they are. Really, it's conversion. You're telling that kid, right? You're not a boy, you're a girl. Let's convert you into a girl. It is modern day conversion therapy. So I promised you over the weekend that I would read this 230-page CAS review. And that's exactly what I did. I sat my butt down and I read it all
every time. Every time I walked by her, I was like, what are you doing? What are you reading? She's like, I'm reading this trans report. I'm like, okay, enjoy your weekend.
You know what, though, bothers me a lot is that it's not a book, so I don't get credit for it on Goodreads, but it was 230 pages, and I was
we'll give you credit.
You read it,
so our audience does not have to.
Okay, because on my yearly reading challenge, I have like 17 books, and I feel like that should say 18. I also read the WPATH file, which were big like that too, and it annoys me because I'm a credit junkie. Go ahead, David.
Why was it my question I was going to ask earlier is like, does this mean we might get LGB back and that's it? Like,
possibly
we'll lose all the additional letters.
Yeah,
I hope so.
So let's go over it a little bit. I have things to share with you that I think that if you don't want to spend a whole weekend reading it, that it would be useful for us to know collectively. It is a very important review of transgender medical care for young people in the UK. One of the most bonkers, crazy bananas takeaway is they don't even have a standard practice for diagnosis of gender dysphoria. So if a kid comes in and even mentions gender in any way, there's not a checklist. There's not a prerequisite for how much time they've felt this way. There's not a prerequisite for how many specialists they've seen. Nothing. So know nothing. There's no standards of how, and they don't even know how many of them. I'm going to show you this in a second. It will blow your mind. I'm sorry, I'm screaming. They don't even know how many they've put on medications. They don't even know the percentage.
Go ahead. They don't have a procedure for it, and they don't even know how many they've put on the medication. So you come in, you're like a 12, 13 year old girl. You're like, yeah, been playing with a lot of footballs lately. I feel like I want to play with my brothers and
and they're like,
oh,
let's cut your boobs off and get you some testosterone.
Yeah, we don't. Is that normal procedure? I don't know, but it just sounds like you're kind of a tomboy. Maybe let's just nip that in the bud right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a person that's a detransitioner that I've watched on YouTube, and she said she walked into Planned Parenthood, got a prescription for testosterone that day. Said they didn't even take her back and ask her any questions or anything. They're just like, here you go, here's your prescription. And she went on it thinking it was right. And now she still has a man's voice, and she's like that for the rest of her life, and is just pissed off about it and trying to tell kids not to do it.
How old was she?
12.
12?
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Holy smokes.
Now, not only the voice issue, but anyone with a vagina, a real one, will find this extremely uncomfortable. The WPATH files that were published by journalist Michael Schellenberger showed that when you put a girl on testosterone, it thins the lining of the vagina so much that it gets cracked and it starts to bleed. It's not a period. It feels like a perpetual yeast infection. It's itchy. And you have to use lube all the time. You're basically making it so you constantly feel pain in your vagina. That's terrible. What it does, that's if you put a girl on testosterone. If you put a boy on estrogen, it's a very common side effect to have painful erections. And these doctors know this from only experience because they refuse to do any scientific studying on it. So their patients are coming back and saying, really hurts when I have an erection. And you know what they tell them because they have no research to help them? They say, try not to have an erection. That's what they're telling young boys. That to me sounds like conversion therapy, doesn't it?
Yeah. Trying to tell a teenage boy impossible. To not to have an erection. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's like telling somebody not to eat food.
It's cruel. I mean, you can laugh about it, right? But that's cruel to send away a boy.
It is cruel.
And with painful erections that they did not have before.
And you're talking about the physical things, but they're not even talking about like what an instant supply of testosterone is going to do to a girl that's never had testosterone.
Yeah.
It's not something your body's just going to be like, oh, this is just a little different. No, that changes everything about the way you think. And I mean,
this is interesting that I had never thought of before. The CAST review says that it takes these young girls and it makes them more sexually aggressive than they may have otherwise been. And so they don't know what their sexuality would have been if they hadn't had this perversion of hormones in them. So you can't say that you didn't change their sexuality. So you may have taken a girl who would have been either heterosexual or a lesbian and completely changed how they now see themselves. But not only that, then they're sterile. So they feel this sort of sexual aggression, but they can't achieve orgasm. So that they're always going to be hyped up and frustrated. And that also, to me, sounds cruel. I mean, we can make lots of jokes about sexual frustration and sexual aggression, but really, that sounds awful.
And it's the rest of their lives. I mean, it's like...
I mean, you can come down from these hormones and you won't be always sexed up like this if you're not on testosterone, but you have done something and this is a formative, these are your formative sexual years where you realize what you're into and what you're not. How do they know themselves if they've done this to themselves during their adolescence? So let's get back to the CAST report. I've already given you the juicier tidbits, but I want you to know who it's from. This was a years-long project written by Dr. Hilary Cass. She is a pediatrician who was formerly president of the Royal College of Pediatrics and Child Health. It is very thorough and very child-first. If you read it, you'll see that what she wants to do is throw the politics of trans ideology out into the trash and help every child. She does not want any toxic debate around this. She just wants children to be stronger and healthier, period. Those of us who have been studying this have said all along. These are gay children being sterilized and experimented on no solid science. And in many cases, these children have autism, ADHD, anxiety, depression, and low body image. Often they come from single parent households, either from a traumatic event. A lot of them have a single parent because one of their parents died. These are kids that need adults to be strong and principled and tell them that ruining their fertility is not the answer. This is what they need. We've let them down because we've given them the opposite. We let advocates and stakeholders change their mind using social media instead of being the adults in the room. Cass says that most children should not transition. Even just changing their name or their gender in a social transition is not a neutral act. In fact, if a child comes to you and says, I want to be called Stanley now, even though I was Jessica before, if you go along with that, you can fast track them into a pharmaceutical life of constant medication. And so she says that young children should only ever make these changes as a last resort. They should only ever be given these hormones in the context of research, and they should absolutely have informed consent on the consequences, such as memory loss, bone density loss, we've talked about all these, loss of fertility, lower IQ. She correctly points out how the research we do have has been hidden and ignored. Look at this. Although the gender services at the NHS had set up research study to evaluate the use of puberty blockers, it failed to publish the result for 4 years. And even when it had it, the NHS continued to act outside of its own findings. So they know that puberty blockers are bad shit for kids. And they hid the research and they kept giving them out. This is a common theme throughout the report.
And it's also a common theme throughout the UK. You know, we now know, of course, thanks to the lockdown files, and we also know thanks to the COVID files. So this seems to be an ongoing thing. We know that this is harmful, but we're going to continue doing
it
anyway.
But we keep doing it. Yeah, good point.
Shows you the power that the pharmaceutical industry has over this world.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the pandemic, because of this, like it all boils down to them trying to get us on some kind of residual drug about money.
And And they couch it culturally, right? So the brilliance of the biopharmaceutical complex is they couch it culturally. So we get into a culture war back and forth.
Yeah.
When they then get to stay out of the argument, the biopharmaceutical complex makes billions of dollars off of these puberty blockers and these,
well,
you know,
lawyers for the trans activists have emails were leaked in Scotland or in Ireland. I think it was Ireland, where they literally said, don't bring this debate into the public because people will not want to do sex changes for kids or decimate all single sex spaces for women. So let's have this quietly. And they had instructions for how to keep it from the public. Let the public, you know, debate about trans issues in a different way while we get our way furtively. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, like, you had these people that are just like, they're anti-corporation and anti, you know, consumerism and all this other stuff, yet they're completely on board with not only taking pharmaceuticals, but promoting them and pushing them. It's like they don't even have to pay for marketing at this point.
Well, let's TikTok's take a look at this at this next slide, because this shows that not only do they not have any consensus on how to diagnose transgender kids anymore, one of the most problematic things she said is that they don't even know how many they've proceeded to put on what they call pathways or interventions, or that have gone on a hormone pathway. So how many of these transgender kids did we give the drugs? They don't know. The government's giving this out, and they literally don't know how many of them they have put on these harmful medications because there's no database. She says, this seems unacceptable in the digital age. You think? She says that our working assumption based on original data was that it's approximately 20% of those referred to this gender identity. 20% of kids go on a medical pathway. This, you guys, is done on purpose. They want to give these kids these medicines with no culpability and no paper trail. It further says that once these kids turn 17 and they go into the adult system, it's kind of like we kind of lose them. We don't know where they go. We don't follow up. We don't know how they've done. We're not sure. And in fact, the WPATH report showed that a lot of patients, a lot of these doctors who give these children either surgeries or hormones, they see them. They'll run into them in town later in life and they'll say, oh, I met someone. We want to have a baby. We're not sure what we can do now, because they didn't understand at the time that they were messing up their fertility and their chances of ever having a family. One more point I'd like to make. Also, they lose these children because they allow these children to switch their national health number. So when you're a UK resident, you get a national health number that you use in the system for all of your medical care. And a child can say, well, I'm trans now, you know, I'm Stanley. And so Stanley gets a brand new medical number in the NHS, and then they lose him, and they can't track what Stanley's medical record was when they were Julie. It's a mess. That is a mess. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, you have all of these people that are in favor of all this, like they're citing all of this scientific data that doesn't exist, but the way that they're doing it, it never will. And like you said, that's by design. They'll never have the scientific data if they're not tracking these people every step of the way after their medication or after their transition.
Now, people are screaming, trans activists are saying, well, she left out 100 studies that didn't support her conclusion. She didn't. She looked at all of these studies, but she concluded that most of them were low quality for this very reason, is because they don't track kids. The maximum amount of time that any British or American study has ever tracked these kids is about 5 years. And the studies in Denmark and Finland that have tracked these people for long term are not very positive in terms of their life trajectory for living out their lives as a transgender person. So she's right about that. Go ahead.
Can I also point out, like, the tracking, like, we saw how they were tracking adverse effects with the vaccine. You got a drop down and you could only select from certain things. So even that, you don't even know what they're tracking. They might have, like, do you have this, this, or this? And it's like, no, everything's fine. If it's not fine, you're out of the study. Like,
well, what they want to track is, yes, fertility. They want to track bone density. So what she's saying is that children who are given this should only be done so in a research only for research purposes, and that we need to track them for long term and know what happens to them, because the studies that we do have around specifically around suicidality is really interesting, because trans activists say if you don't give these kids what they need, they're going to kill themselves. And in fact, what she shows, I didn't bring a screen for this, but what she shows is that there is a high and increasing number of mental illness in the population in the UK, and that trans kids have an equal risk of suicide to all kids with mental illness. And in fact, that population overlaps. So there is no data that shows that trans kids are more at risk than other mental illness patients. They're the same. And there is data, she doesn't say this, but I'm saying this and I can provide lots of data. There is data that shows that when you do transition somebody, it increases their risk of suicide, and it increases not only their attempts, but their success rate at suicide. Because you think you're a person in their 30s, you've cut up all your body parts, you're addicted to medication in order to keep yourself looking from one way, and you can't ever have an orgasm or a meaningful sexual experience. Yeah, you can't blame someone for being depressed and wanting to pack it in, right? You shouldn't, but like, we don't have, also she says, we don't support people once they're going through this kind of thing. Also, there's no care for detransitioners, and that all gender clinics should have support for detransitioners and detransitioners on staff. How are those people ever going to get along in an office, right?
Well, that's Chloe.
Yeah,
I was gonna say Chloe Cole talks about how her parents, she doesn't blame her parents because they were manipulated by the doctors. The doctors you're supposed to trust, saying exactly that. Would you rather have a live son or a dead daughter?
Yeah, and like, there's no statistics around that supports None. This loaded gun threat of suicide. So let's leave that aside. Now, this weekend, an investigation from the Times of London showed that Stonewall, which is the trans advocacy group that in the UK led the charge on medicalizing trans kids, hid research from education facilities, schools, and educators that was very much in line with the CAST report. This is Baroness Ruth Hunt, a current member of the House of Lords. What came out this weekend showed that she took a report that said pretty much everything the CAST report says. We have no medicine on, we have no research on this. This may not be great for kids. We should proceed with caution. And she told schools not to read it. She literally said, this is not best practices. You should put it in the shredder. Think of how many educators did not read this and didn't have the chance to realize that they were being ideologically captured. And she said that medicalization and gender affirmation was the only where to go. Basically, don't look here. And now it's been come to light that she did this. She left Stonewall in 2019, and surprise, she now says she's changed her tune, because all of that turned out to be not true. They had no data on that. Now she actually says, this is rich, she says she's worried that lesbians can't be lesbians the way she is, that obviously she's a more masculine version of a lesbian, and she doesn't say she's a man. She says, I worry, you know, that like these young lesbians are being medicalized and told they're a boy. Here are a few quotes from her recently saying, the hard facts simply aren't there to back any of this up, meaning gender transition. Talking to a specialist is not the same as transitioning. Very few young people who access support go on to transition. Well, how does she know that, given how little the NHS knows that? She says, that's what we would expect. That's what successful gender treatment should look like. But she says, as a lesbian herself, I've always been deeply concerned about the internalized homophobia that's going on for young women. That means that they can't be a dyke. They've got to be a boy. I didn't know we could use that word. I guess we use dyke again.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with it. Yeah.
No? Okay.
No.
She said, I have this kind of fantasy that little baby lesbians could go to a clinic and say, I want to wear a suit, so I want to be a boy. And they're told, no, you're a lesbian who wears a suit. Meaning, like, it's okay to just be a more masculine woman. Whether you're a lesbian or not, you can perform gender however you want. You shouldn't make other people say what you want them to say about how they perceive you. You shouldn't mutilate your body. Now she says, you know, oh, that's not what I was about. That's not what Stonewall was about. Sorry, I didn't mean it. She acted in bad faith. She was pushing sex changes on children. And the research has long since shown, again, that trans kids more often than not turn out to be non-gender dysphoric gay kids, and she's mutilating them. Now, we've been showing you this research, and here it is in the CAST report. I just took some snippets of it. I'm not going to read it all to you. You can screenshot it. And the CAST report is a free download. So you can, you know, take a screenshot of this or pause it here and look for this stuff yourself. We have long since known that these are just gay kids. That's it. And then after this weekend, now there's a change.org petition to strip Baroness Ruth Hunt of her peerage in the House of Lords, again, because she acted against her own people. And gay people are pissed about it. You could spend hours on Twitter how many gay people are saying, I told you this. This is not the same. Trans is not gay. This is not our group. And you betrayed us.
Get it out of the flag. Can you rip the trans part out of the gay flag now?
I mean, really would like to see that happen. Absolutely. Yeah. Instead of more symbols added to it, fewer. Because gay is not a circus. It's not a perversion for people to play with, you know, like gay people fight against the perception that they're perverts, most normal people who want to have a normal life. And this is not helping them. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we all like can acknowledge how hard they fought to even get LGB. Like that was a, you know, and then when it became a thing, like now it's like all these other things have attached themselves to it instead of starting their own thing. And so a lot of them, like there's been hashtags on X, like remove the T.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that don't go with the Q, the T, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it'd be right. Nice to just have a nice quiet LGB again.
Yeah. But as pissed as gay people are at Baroness Ruth Hunt, they are applauding Hillary Cass, Dr. Pediatrician Hillary Cass. Here's a gay man I follow on Twitter whose initial reaction to the Cass report was that every gay bar should have a statue of Dr. Hillary Cass because she has literally ended gay conversion 2.0. And I think she will be substantially on a global scale. So let's call her the academic Cher because she saved gay people. She's championing their right to exist in a healthy and authentic way. Now, I could go on and on about the CAST report. There's just two more things that I'd like to highlight for you if you're not going to read it. One thing is there is absolutely an increase in girls identifying as trans, and it cannot be explained by just social acceptance. Looking at this, the number of girls suddenly being referred to gender clinics, whereas gender dysphoria, we've talked about, was historically... only something that very young boys displayed. And now all of a sudden it's girls. And as we've discussed, many of them have pre-existing family or mental health issues that are not being treated. They go into a gender clinic. It's clear this person is autistic or has other mental health issues. And they're like, we'll fix it with your gender. We'll do that. We know that teenage girls are the most prone to social trends of any other group. I don't think you can argue anything else. We've talked about how when Princess Diana said she was bulimic, it inspired a whole generation, my generation, to be bulimic as teenagers during the Victorian era. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you have girls in school that are becoming trans as in groups.
Right.
You know what I mean, it's almost like becoming emos.
Yeah. So I want to show you one more thing that they're doing in groups. I also want to point out not just Princess Diana, but that during the Victorian era, it was considered feminine and appropriate for young women to just faint. That had an element of social contagion. They're like, oh, let me just display to you my femininity. They literally could make themselves do it.
They all did that?
Yes.
Like, you remember the movies where they would be like, oh.
Yeah, literally that. Now, the CAST report shows that there is now research that's an overlap with gender dysphoria and young girls who imitate tics, facial tics. So one example, they say, is a functional movement disorder called functional tic-like behavior. It's a classic neurodevelopmental tics that start in childhood and last longer than a year if they then can be diagnosed with Tourette syndrome. And it's usually 70 to 80% happens in boys. In contrast, though, this FTLB is typically found to occur in young females with complex disabling and tic look-alike patterns, usually triggered by exposure to videos on the internet portraying tic-like behaviors on social media. This imitation tick behavior is associated with high levels of depression and anxiety, as if these girls just went to the internet to figure out, how can I display that I'm anxious and need attention, came on these videos of how to, like, have, I'm not going to do it, have a facial tick. Do you want to try it, Clayton? I have no idea. I thought about spending some time watching for this to see if I could learn, like, oh, if I wanted to pretend. I think that's got to be super offensive to people who have real tics on their face. Like, it's not a toy for a young girl to use to get attention. But if we could just put this screen back up here and let me finish. It says the association between this tick-like behavior and gender diversity described by clinical staff reports that 41% of patients with this functional tick had a gender minority identity. So it's something literally they are acting out. It's very strange. And it's just we've been... Yeah, I think it is. It says they're looking for this on the internet. They're seeking it out.
So they're seeking out what they want to have.
Yes, in the same way, right, that they watch transgender influencers and they say, oh, okay, this is the way to do it. I'm going to do it this way, right? Absolutely. So what does it say to you? Again, it says that this is not a population of children that knows what's best for them. Like, the narrative is that children know. And we should not just give them what they want because they saw it on the internet. We're the adults here. We have to look at the data and do what is best, even if the kids don't like it. I have teenagers. I know I'm never popular with them, and that's just the way it's got to be. And if we don't, we absolutely should face the consequences of not helping our children, like lawsuits or losing your seat in government. In response to all of this, though, the Charity Mermaid says that they will help these kids get hormones outside of the NHS. Mermaid says they're going to set up a hotline. How long until that's going to not be legal anymore or they get sued for acting against currently available research? So I know I've just dropped a lot on you. The cast report was long. I felt like you should see it. So I've just given you a big-ass book report.
It took you 3 days to read it. You just got a 35-minute breakdown.
Yeah.
Segment of
what
it.
Did you learn, Clayton? What was interesting from that?
I learned how to do a facial tick.
You didn't. Don't you think that? I think if
no, I learned
you've got
a lot,
someone
but
who's really
got
that.
I'm not going to do another 30 minutes.
Okay.
I'll save it for later.
Tell me that was interesting, darling.
It was very interesting. Many, many layers of interesting in it. Go ahead, David.
Have you guys ever gone down the DID rabbit hole on TikTok, the dissociative disorder, and how it's just overwhelming females that think they have multiple personalities, and it's got so out of control, they're now selling their personalities to other people so that they can take them into their system and house them.
Actually, the WPATH report talks about how a lot of transgender kids are misdiagnosed for this kind of thing. And that now that becomes an issue because when those things overlap, you don't know how to get consent from your other personalities. And so, like, you may say, I want to cut off my boobs, but what if your other personality doesn't? And they don't know how to treat these kids. And so some of these more unscrupulous gender advocates say, well, talk to yourself in an app and see what the other one thinks. Yeah, it's wild.
Now you know why some of these tribes in the Amazon don't want to have any interaction with us.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want any interaction with us either.
We land there, they're going to shoot us with a blow dart. Like, thunk, get out of here, you weirdos.
But I've never seen any of that on TikTok. I'm afraid to seek that stuff out because what's the algorithm going to do to me?
No.
Yeah. Oh, once you see it, it's there.
Yeah.
I'd have to reinstall.
Be on here.
I can take anything in a book.
And
I'll read it in a book.
Face.
I'd have to reinstall TikTok, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
No, I don't have ADHD. I don't have ADHD. I can focus. Someone in the chat says Clayton has ADHD. Do I have ADHD?
No. Decidedly not.
No, I can focus for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
I developed a tic during that segment.
No, you didn't.
All right, guys. Well, we have a daily newsletter. We'd love for you to subscribe to it. please go to redacted.inc. It's totally free. Someone earlier in the chat said the redacted newsletter is labeled dangerous by Gmail. Yes, it is. Google labels our newsletter dangerous because we cover real news in our newsletter that you can get first thing in the morning over your cup of coffee. It's free. You should all download it. And by the way, it's our way to stay connected with you. It's not owned by any big tech company. We don't sell your data or anything like that. You sign up for the newsletter. You get a great newsletter Monday through Thursday delivered to your inbox. You can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. And we cover 4 or 5 of the big stories of the day, plus some market updates, some things you might have missed while you were sleeping. And we try to leave you with a little bit of a smile to start your day. So go to redacted.inc. It's not .com. Just INC, and put in your email address. You will receive a welcome email from me, Clayton, at redacted.inc. Feel free to drop me an email and say hello. I love to say hello to you guys. But you'll have to click verify when you receive that email. Otherwise, you will not get the normal newsletter. You have to click verify. So we have that double opt-in, so we keep away spam people and trolls and all that kind of stuff. So, oh boy, you guys.
Know, I have never once had a warmongering politician fundraising email marked as dangerous. Not once.
Isn't it funny? Yeah. You know, you get like newsletter. those emails from like all those campaigns, you know, because we do it in the news business to see what these different campaigns are trying to, you know, fundraise on. So back in the day, I mean, when I worked at Fox News, I would have like Hillary Clinton emails coming in. I had like, you know, Trump emails coming in. I had Rand Paul emails coming in. I had... But they were never flagged for any problems, any warmongering, any problems at all. But our newsletter gets labeled as dangerous?
Well, I mean, there was the federal case recently about the Republican Party saying that the Gmail was downranking their newsletters and pushing up Democratic newsletters. It was only thrown out on a technicality. The court did say it does seem like Gmail is doing this.
Yeah, for sure. We know that that's the case.
Right.
We know that. Well, anyways, guys, we are praying for peace tonight. We hope that people will not be dying in droves. That seems to be what's about to happen. Israel responding. The response could be imminent tonight. Iran is threatening a 1,500 missile response if Israel strikes them. So pray, hug your loved ones tonight. We care about humans and not war. Much love to all of you guys. Have a great night. We hope we will be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time, if we still can. Much love to all of you guys. Have a great night, everyone.